Now, we saw this article a few weeks back in February that Alex Dubro, D-U-B-R-O, wrote, called The Myth of the Efficient Car. And we were talking a lot about cars and electric cars and hybrids. And there came this kind of really interesting, wonderful, contrarian view of all of this. And we thought, this is worth a conversation. And Alex Dubro joins us in studio right now live. And Alex, welcome. Good to have you here.
Glad to be here, Mark.
So, and you all can join us here at 410-319-8888 when you're good and ready, or join us at steinershow@gmail.com to email us in, or just go to steinershow.org and link to this article, and you can read it as we talk, or take a look at it if you haven't already seen it. So, this is really interesting to me. I mean, as soon as I saw this, I went, okay. I had just finished interviewing Chelsea Sexton, who is a woman who developed EV1, the early electric vehicle, electric vehicle one at General Motors, and was fired, and they crushed it.
That's right.
And it's supposed to be the wave of the future, but you're positing this may not be the wave at all, or maybe should not be the wave.
Well, it could be. It may be that there still is some place for the personal vehicle, but on the scale that we now use cars, it doesn't seem to me that we can address the issues of global warming and other intensive pollution issues simply by changing the way we power the car.
Because, all right, this is what you've been writing about that I found really interesting. Let me read you the one line, the opening paragraph. Let's get something straight about green industry. In its basic form, it means we'll have to buy new stuff, lots of it. As an industrial policy that will create jobs and increase spending, it's pretty sound. As an environmental policy, it's largely a fraud.
That's a
hell of a statement.
That's a grabber, isn't it? Well, the problem is, at this point, it's very difficult to distinguish between green as a marketing technique and green as an environmental policy. And to some degree, it's been overtaken by marketing, and it's been overtaken by cultural issues. Let me just read you quickly an article from the Washington Post, an interview with Soo Chin Pak,
okay,
who she was at MTV News talking about green issues. And she said, being green doesn't look like what it used to. In the past, it was about hippies that love children. Really, it's about very simple little changes you can make. You can still be into fashion and do green. Well, no. You know, it isn't really simply about reconfiguring the things you already have. It really is. I'm sorry, but I can't see any other way than to say it is about sacrifice and it is about giving things up. And I know how unpopular it is. And, you know, I'm one of us. I don't live in a hemp house and you know, wash myself in cold water. I mean, I live an ordinary life. I have a car. You know, I have a house. And it's going to be extremely difficult to change these things. But if you like this, seems like a very nice young woman, but she's talking about, you know, what kind of cosmetics you have to get in order to be green. All of these things may or may not be incremental, but if I'm going on the UN's IPCC Commission on Global Warming, assuming that their statistics are true, the kind of things that green industry is proposing, the industrial policy that's being proposed, will simply not meet the emergency. It isn't enough. It isn't even basically the way to tackle it.
So one of the things you talk about here, what's being made a huge deal of is President Barack Obama's calling for 1 million plug-in hybrids getting 150 miles per gallon by the year 2015.
Right.
And another million electric cars that you can plug in
that's
by
right.
2015. And that's 2 million cars on the road, he's saying, to cut the pollution that we're using now.
Right. Well, there are more registered cars in the United States than registered drivers. There's almost as many registered cars as there are people. There's over 250 million.
Cars.
And there's 600 million and counting cars worldwide, up from 200 million in 1970. Now, the U.S. is by far the biggest car market. And, you know, I heard the new president of General Motors today on the radio as I was coming up.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're lamenting. And it's so painful to listen to these guys. But they're selling 10 million cars a year. You know, it's not as though the automobile industry is hit rock bottom. If it's 250 million cars a year, 2 million is not going to make a significant difference. No, even if they were pedal cars, it really wouldn't make any difference.
So then, is there an argument to be made that you could reconfigure the entire automobile industry in the next 20 years so that everything is a hybrid or a hybrid plug-in or a hybrid electric vehicle of one kind or another, that would make a difference?
Not the way I'm reading the statistics and not the way it's laid out at the moment. The problem is twofold. One is that a car is not simply a car. A car is everything that it takes to sustain an automobile culture. That is, either concrete or asphalt highways, the delivery systems for fuel, no matter what they are, the tires, the oil, everything associated with it uses immense amount of energy. And it just does not seem on the face of it that people can actually continue to drive around in cars. That is, you know, one person to one car, which is basically the way we do it, and that there's any way to make a car that would substantially enough reduce greenhouse emissions and other pollutants. So that's one of the problems. The other problem is that a car in and of itself is unsustainable in that a car doesn't really move people. A car moves cars. People are almost incidental to it. I drove up here alone. I couldn't find another good way to get here.
I drove over here alone myself today, across town.
Yep. We could have come together.
We could have. I'd have picked you up if I'd known you were coming.
That's right. Drive down to Washington, pick me up and come back. Right. And that's sort of how it is. But I'm only one-tenth of the weight of a car. So what we're doing is moving cars around. You may be asking me, well, and I guess you will, what should I do?
What should we do? I mean, if electric cars, I mean, if the argument is that people are going to stay in their vehicles,
mm-hmm,
and they're going to drive,
mm-hmm,
somebody like Chelsea Sexton, who I interviewed a little bit ago, and her interview will be coming up on the show soon, argues that we have to have a combination of pedestrian-created urban areas, pedestrian-friendly urban living,
mm-hmm,
with mass transit,
mm-hmm,
as Barack Obama has talked about trying to build high-speed rail in this country, investing in that, and the development of mass-produced electric cars that take the place,
mm-hmm,
of our gasoline-powered cars. That's where the investment has to be realistic and move the country forward. And that, in fact, would work, they say.
Well, it depends what you mean by work. You know, there's a lot of reasons for having an electric car, and there are substantial, even environmental reasons for having one. Also, they're better as cars. I mean, one of the reasons that cars deteriorate is the internal vibration caused by a gasoline engine. An electric engine car would have far less of that. So, in and of itself, it's good. The question is, really, can we sustain 250 million electric cars?
Can we?
Not and meet the climate change goals that we've set out for ourselves. I mean, there's no realistic way to power 250 million cars that doesn't involve carbon emissions in some way or other. You know, beyond that, I can't see that far into the future, but what I'm doing is looking at what's in front of us now. really, realistically, the only way is to cut down on the number of cars. And as you say, to build, not just to say build walkable cities. There's lots of urban centers that are essentially walkable. But once you get outside of those, you know, the mass of U.S. population lives in the near and far suburbs. There isn't really a mass transit plan that's on the books that I know of that can deal with that. Furthermore, I would take all mass transit promises with a grain of salt. The U.S. frequently comes out with them, but so far, you know, our mass transit plans are almost boutique. They do not cover most of the transportation that we need. So the question is how? It really will require a reshuffling so that people live and work in roughly the same area.
So we're talking with Alec Dubrow, that's D-U-B-R-O, by the way, who's a writer, who's written many things over many years. You might have heard him on other radio shows nationally, like Michael Hartman. You have read him in The Progressive, read him in The Nation. He's written in many magazines. The article we're talking about is called The Myth of the Efficient Car. That is in The Progressive Magazine's February issue. You can go to our website, steinershow.org, and link to that article right now. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. What do you think now with Detroit being bailed out, or allegedly being bailed out, and the United States government owning a portion of both General Motors and Chrysler? Can we use electric cars and other vehicles to get ourselves out of this disaster that we face in terms of polluting the earth? Or is that just part of the mythology? Is there another way we should be doing this? 410-319-8888, as you careen around the Beltway, wherever you're driving at the moment, either D.C.'s Beltway or Baltimore's Beltway, thinking about the future of your how to get from one place to the other, what do you think? Alec Dubrow is saying that electric cars, it's a mythology that this is going to get us out of our problem. 410-319-8888. I think there are a lot of things when you think about electric cars that we don't think about the consequences of it. I mean, the elements we need to fuel electric car, and why I'm blocking on the name, you'll probably come up with it, that we mine in Zaire, in the Congo, that you have to have for our batteries.
Coltan?
And that is causing a lot of the tensions inside developing worlds, causing wars.
Yes.
Just like oil is causing wars.
Yes.
So, and people don't have a good, and plus there probably may be not enough of that anyway to fuel all of our needs.
Well, I'm not sure. Maybe coltan is the one in cell phone batteries.
I think you're right. That's
yeah. I don't know. There's a variety of battery technologies, and maybe the next guest can explain those better than I. I don't really know. The question is the scale. There is, of course, no perfectly benign way for humans to have a technological society that doesn't cause some environmental damage or affect the environment in some way. But the question is, can we have 6.8 million people, and at the moment, only about 25% of them are fully in the consumer culture? Can we continue to expand that and hope to solve the problem by greater efficiencies? An electric car is essentially a more efficient car.
And your argument in the article is that efficiency has its own inherent problems.
Efficiency is, it's sometimes misconstrued. I talk about my basis for the criticism has come up again and again in the last 150 years. It was first recognized in mid-19th century England by an engineer named William Stanley Jevons.
Yeah.
The Jevons paradox, when he found that the more efficient they made machinery at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, ultimately, the more fuel they would consume. He was working on what was called the Coal Commission. And he found out that if you make them more efficient, they get better, more people use them, more people buy them, and they use them more. So it uses more energy, not less, than a big, clunky, old, inefficient machine, because everybody has them. That may be the case with electric cars and may not. There are cost issues involved in it. At the moment, there's all sorts of restrictions on electric cars, such as range, speed, and a lot of other things that are reflected in its price. But in and of itself, I don't think you can solve a technological problem by technological means. And I realize that makes me very unpopular, certainly with a lot of my friends in the labor movement. But, you know, I read it. I see it. That's my argument. It's up to other people to refute it. I mean, if I'm completely wrong, great, I'll go buy a new car. But that's not the way I see it right now.
For us to get to the point of changing, let's say, even the cars we use, I mean, the policy that President Obama has announced for General Motors, a lot of people think is really lacking when it comes to a real redesign of the auto industry.
Well, I say this as a 18-year member of the UAW. I'm a member of and used to be president of the Writers Union, which is a division of the UAW, and we've always taken their concerns very seriously.
The Writers Union, not the Writers Guild?
That's correct. The Guild represents people in television and in television.
And so, your union represented what?
We represent freelance writers, like print and now increasingly internet writers.
And that was part of the UAW?
Well, we merged with the UAW. We affiliated with them in, I believe, 1981.
In 91.
And so, you know, I understand the concerns both of the automobile workers and of the industry. But I'm sorry, what was your original question?
Well, no, we were talking about what President Obama was announcing today about the revamping of the GM. Yeah. There are a lot of people arguing that this revamping is not a revamping at all, that we are maybe bailing out GM, but with very little direction where it's changing, it's doing very little for the workers, more people are going to be laid off, and some people are having a hard time seeing what this is going to do for the future of automobiles or the industry.
Well, that's sort of a separate question, but not entirely.
Not entirely, right.
Yeah. Really, this is a question whether the new form of management at GM can make more saleable cars or come up with a more profitable model. Whether those cars are going to be consume less gas, they're going to have to if the law is going to be followed. I think some government direction here would move them more in that way. But there's no assurance that this money is going to enable these particular companies to compete with the other companies that have shown themselves more willing to adapt.
So now, if electric cars are not going to work, and you talk about in this article, which I found really interesting, that it's the other aspects of automobiles we're not taking into account, whether it's the concrete, the pavement, the tires, that consume and use a lot of energy and create a huge amount of pollution.
That's correct. I mean, we tend... Even gas mileage itself is not really, for most people, a significant part of owning a car. Whether they pay $2 or $3 a gallon in the overall cost of a car is, like I say, not terribly significant. It seems like it because you get out and you look and see those numbers turning over. But the costs of purchase, maintenance, taxes, parking, every other associated cause adds up and fuels only a part of it. But the other is you have to maintain a car infrastructure. It's more than an infrastructure. We have a car culture, as we well know. Cars, houses have to be built larger to accommodate cars. You have cars, that means you can bring more things home. So you have more things, so you build bigger houses. And then the car itself isn't big enough, so you have to get an SUV to carry even more things. I mean, the question is, with this recession and the shocks to the economy, is that particular curve beginning to come down? It may. But again, the question is whether there will be adaptations fast enough to meet the climate change crisis.
Alec Dubrow is our guest. A very contrarian view, his article, The Myth of the Efficient Car, in the February edition of The Progressive. You can go to steinershow.org to read that article, and it really kind of engaged us, thinking that all this talk we have about electric cars, and really thinking clearly about what that would mean, that it sounds great emotionally, but will it really work for the future of this country? Can we really change an industry? And many would argue that unless you can, one of the shocking statistics in here, actually, that we don't think about, is that even if we reach the goal of 2 million new cars by 2015, that's a million hybrid, plug-in hybrids and an additional million plug-in vehicles by 2015, there we have a quarter of a million registered vehicles in the United States of America, which is just a drop in the bucket.
I think the only thing limiting our cars is that no person yet can drive more than one car at a time. So, it does. In a sense, it may not matter if we buy a few more. But of course, as I also say in here, that nobody's quite sure the statistics. They range from 10 to 50% of all the energy that a car uses is used in the manufacture of it. So that again, here the actual mileage may not be the significant number. It's certainly, you know. The best thing you can do at this point for the environment is not to get a new car. If you want to get 50% better mileage, drive your car half as much, in a sense. Well, not mileage, but if you want to use, you know, half as much fuel, drive it half as much. Then they don't have to engage in the production of a new car.
Or if you had an infrastructure that may actually move people out of their cars, which would take a good 20 years to get people out of their cars and even to build in America. But if you follow the example of Spain and really build high-speed rail, I mean, when I leave here and go to Washington, I drive to the Penn Station, get in the MARC or an Amtrak, take a train to D.C., take subways everywhere except for Georgetown because they were afraid to have black folks come there, so they didn't want it there in the first place. But other than that, in D.C., you can go anywhere with light rail other than Georgetown, and it's a system that works. We're just afraid to spend the money to make it work.
Oh, it's a huge investment.
Huge,
and it's not without its own costs. But the amount of energy per passenger mile is much, much less, and you know the restrictions it puts on people are perhaps good in the long run. I mean, if they can't fill up their cars with junk, then they're not going to buy so much if they have to carry it by themselves. All this sounds, you know, like I don't approve of fun. And, you know, maybe I don't. I don't know. Certainly I don't approve of it for some people. And I won't name them, but...
We've been talking with Alec Dubrow. It's a really fascinating article. He's a great writer. He's written for many, many thought-provoking pieces, when he was associated with TomPaine.com, and still right there sometimes, no? Not as much.
Nah, not so much. No, now I'm getting... I've gone off in this direction now. I want to do longer pieces on the environment.
What's coming next? What are you working on now?
Stainless steel.
Stainless steel?
Yeah, I've got a thing about stainless steel.
You don't like stainless steel?
Well... I think stainless steel is in part keeping Robert Mugabe in power. How do you like that for a thesis?
All right, hold that. When's that article coming out?
When I finish it, in a couple of months.
We want to have you on for that one. Okay. That's for sure. And we look forward to having you back on. And you don't have to surf from D.C. We can get you on by phone, or we'd be lovely to have you in Baltimore. It's lovely to see you. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure, Mike.
Alec Dubrow, The Myth of the Efficient Car. In the February edition of the Progressive magazine, you can get to it by linking there, or just going right to steinershow.org for a link. And speaking of electric vehicles, there is a company in Baltimore, pardon me, called Green Rider in Fells Point. It's an electric scooter shop. Now, something that might work in a city is if people got on electric scooters and bounced around town rather than their cars. I like this idea. We're going to talk to them about this idea when we come back. Stay with us, and we will meet Ray Carrier, who started this business. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. It just says we're going to break here that we are going to talk to Ray Carrier, who owns a company called Green Rider. And I said that, you know, if we could all get around Baltimore on electric scooters, we might be a lot better off. We're going to talk about his business. But first, before we introduce Ray and these scooters, I encourage you to go to greenriderusa.com and look at what we're talking about as we talk about it. But listen for just a moment to what we're about to talk about. It's on, it's silent, it's on the road. Ray Carrier, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Mark, for having me on.
This is whether or not electric cars are the savior of the planet, this idea of people getting around on scooters, which is huge in Europe and in Latin America and in Asia, but not here. So tell us about this place of yours.
Yes, that's exactly the problem, is that everywhere else in the world that we seem to be having people who have switched over, or in some cases and got there first before even getting into the cars, like they have in China, for example, where most people can't afford cars. And so we're seeing them everywhere. And that's one of the things that struck me, because I'm an internationalist. I've been traveling quite a bit, and it was while I was overseas that I realized that so many more people have use these vehicles in, you know, as a substitute for a car, sometimes as a full-time substitute, and sometimes as, you know, as a substitute perhaps as a second car.
What are these things? I'm looking at these motor scooters, and very attractive models on the motor scooters, mm-hmm. because that's what you need to sell anything these days, I guess. But you for very inexpensively, you have these, they're called motorinos, right? And they come in a lot of different. So talk a bit about these, what these vehicles are. No gas at all.
That's right. They are low-speed electric vehicles. Essentially, the initial vehicles that I have, my scooters, my first products that I'm going to be selling. And later on, I will be selling other products, electric bikes and electric motorcycles, but I'm starting with electric scooters, totally green. They have the appearance of motorcycles, but they are limited to speeds of 30 miles per hour. That's the maximum. They actually come at 20 miles per hour, but it's possible to adjust them to go 30, and they still meet the moped requirements of the state of Maryland. That's what they're considered. And essentially, how they work is they work on electric batteries. You plug them in, and then once they're fully charged, you can go for a distance of approximately 30 miles distance on them. Then, just as I did when I came up here, when I arrived here, I looked around to see if I could find an electric plug, and I plugged it in outside. And so it's in the process of recharging. And then in 2 to 4 hours, if I wanted to wait that long, I would have a full charge, and I'd be back ready to go again with zero cost for gasoline.
So, mate, you rode your scooter from Fells Point up to here?
Of course, yes.
And how was
I've been driving it all the time in the city since I've had them. And on a daily basis, I go to and from. I live in Charles Village area. Just to drive down with the traffic. The one thing about Baltimore is that you do have to be careful about the potholes. And they're much more sensitive to potholes than a big car is. But if you're watching where you're going, you shouldn't have too many problems.
So have these caught on in Europe?
They're starting to catch on in Europe, but these particular Motorino products, they're actually developed by a scientist and engineer based in Vancouver, Canada, and that's where when I first started, it's been over a year and a half ago now that I decided to try to get into this business. I had been doing international consulting work, and I decided that I wanted to find a business, and particularly a green business, because I'm very green oriented and my whole philosophy. And so I started to investigate them, and I was very much surprised to find out that here in North America, there's almost nobody who's been getting involved with them. Part of the product has been that so many companies tried to bring them in the past, but the industry is centered in China right now. I mean, the main reason is if you've got a population over there of 1.2 billion, I believe, and less than 5% of them can afford cars. What happened over there is that they started with gas scooters, But gas scooters are very heavily polluting. Most people don't realize how much, but I saw a report recently that saying that some gas scooters pollute more than two Hummers combined because they're too small to have emission controls.
Uh-huh.
And you saw the Olympics where all the pollution in China, a big part of that is the problem comes from gas scooters, and they actually banned gas scooters in most major cities. And they switched over to electric scooters several years ago. But the problem was is that the Chinese they're concerned with their local domestic market. They're trying to just get them out the door as fast as possible, and they seem to be not concerned at all with quality control. And many American companies went over, even Lee Iacocca went over to try and start up a business in this field. And they went to a factory, saw something very pretty with lots of bells and whistles on them. But as soon as you bring them over here, there's no, if something goes wrong with it, you can't get the replacement parts, this type of thing. My supplier in Canada tried something different. He's been in the business since 2002, and in fact had been an engineer consultant in China before. That's how he was working at a power plant there and bought one of them while he was there and brought it to Vancouver, and people saw it, and he decided that he would get into the business. And he told me at the beginning that first couple of years he was more than 100 grand in the hole because of all the problems. And so, but he, rather than quit like so many people did, and he started to try to improve the technology to, every component that he designed himself and changed it and introduce innovations every year. And he's now the most successful dealer in Canada. He's got more than 25 dealerships scattered across country. And I met him last summer. He told me he was just getting ready to move into the USA, that he didn't want to do so before because he didn't feel his product was ready. But now he introduced a new technology about a year and a half ago that is unique, and he's ready for it now. And I'm his first distributor and dealer.
In the United States of America. It's right here in Baltimore. Join us here, 410-319-8888. Go over to greenriderusa.com and check out this website. The first dealership in America for low-speed electric vehicles, for scooters, and soon-to-be motorcycles, is here in Baltimore in Fells Point. It's run and owned by Ray Carrier, our guest today, who owns this shop. And you can rent or buy these scooters there. And a lot of you love getting around town on scooters. Join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Think about jumping on a silent scooter, no pollution, tooling around town, up to 30 miles an hour. Get to where you want to go, easy to park, plug it in, and you're off again. What do you think? Does it work for you? 410-319-8888 is the number here. So, when I look at this, at what you're selling, there are also, and what they have, I mean, they're the internationally in Vancouver, and they also have motorcycles that go a little faster, that move. Is that coming too?
That will be coming later, yes. My supplier at Motorino has developed a motorcycle that he said that he expects maybe later on this summer that he will be bringing as well. But he has already developed some electric bicycles, and I'm also working on some other conversion kits. There's a company called Bionics that has developed something they call industrial intelligent design vehicle. Mm-hmm. And it is very unique. It basically adjusts to the strength of the rider.
Let me ask some questions. Let's get on the phones. Ray Carrier's with us. They were talking about green scooters, electric scooters that you can get around town in. New business in Baltimore, starting off here, first place in America to sell them. Fits right into our theme of looking at sustainable economies. Maybe we can live a little differently. Is this for you? We'll find out. 410-319-8888 is the number here. And Nadian in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was calling because I'm actually interested in purchasing an electric scooter.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Come on down.
Nadine, you have a question? Hello, Nadine, you there?
Hello?
Yes, did you have a question?
Yes, I'm also hearing the news in the background.
What? Maybe you should turn your...
I can hear the NPR news playing.
Why don't you turn off the radio? Oh.
My radio is I'm hearing it through the phone.
It's coming through the phone, so we're having another phone problem here. I'm sorry about ignore that and just keep talking. I apologize.
Okay. I was actually interested in purchasing an electric scooter, but my concern is in terms of the different weather and climate, like how does it work, like in fall or winter? Like, does it reduce the ability for it to run in cold weather?
If the weather is very, very cold, yes, there may be problems with it. But, I mean, I keep them, I carry an extension cord with me, and I just plug them into, my house. And when you have the charger in it, it keeps it warm. They're not convenient to drive on icy roads and this type of thing, obviously. And the same thing applies on like very, very heavy rainstorms, this type of thing, when the roads are very slippery.
Okay.
Then you have to be a lot more careful. But other than that, I mean, Baltimore, probably we get so little snow here that maybe 10 days of the year where you have a problem like that.
How do you get around now, Nadine?
Right now I drive, but I see our family, we only have one car between the four of us. And they're two drivers, two adult drivers, and then one of us gets dropped off, and then we share the dropping off of children and activities and all of that. But we share one vehicle.
I understand completely. But a little scooters, actually, I've thought about this myself for a while. I mean, it's a way to get around town.
Mm-hmm.
Just your daily kind of going to work and back home and just...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It would be a good way for a family to get a second vehicle, but not increase their carbon footprint.
Right. And not lose her wallet in the process.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. My scooters go there.
We can't talk price on public radio. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But it's not, that's right.
I wasn't aware of that.
But they're reasonable.
Yes. So that's good to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
An extremely low five figures. Extremely low. Mm-hmm. You can say that much. 410-319-8888. How do you get about town? Do you get on about town on a scooter or a motorcycle now? Have you thought about getting into an electric vehicle? How about an electric scooter? You going to say something, right? I'm sorry.
Yes, because my goal basically is to try to help transform Baltimore into a greener city. The mayor, for example, is very strong on bicycles and trying to promoting very heavily the bicycle plan. She personally participates in bicycle rides at least once a week, and so scooters and bicycles, but electric That's basically what I'm trying to get people to switch over to. We're very much a car culture right now and very much reliant on our vehicles, but everyone knows that we have high gas prices. Last year the prices went up to $4. They took an abrupt drop recently. But they've already gone up 70% just in the last since the beginning of the year. And anybody who thinks that they're not going to go up. And in the meantime, you can also get a tax credit through the government as
for
part
buying
of this
a scooter?
Program. For buying this program, you can have a 10% deduction of the price knocked off your income tax next year as part of President Obama's economic stimulus plan.
Now that's a motivation. We're talking about Green Rider. It's on South Broadway, 723 South Broadway in Fells Point. Telephone number is 410-522-5857. 410-522-5857. Or go to greenriderusa.com. Ray Carrier, Carrier, has been our guest. He's proprietor of Green Rider in Fells Point. Go down and rent a scooter. Check it out for yourself. And see what the vision of tomorrow is right now. And it's been good to have you here. Sorry it took so long. It's good to have you in the studio.
No problem, Mark. Thank you very much.
Looking forward to writing one myself.
My motto is, don't be foolish, save your green, be a Green Rider.
Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, Urbanite gets on board our transportation future with stories on how electric cars could change the city, the battle for streets between drivers and bicyclists, and a possible second act for the great American streetcar. Urbanite is available at over 700 locations around the region and online at urbanitebaltimore.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Jessica Phillips. We're engineered by Mike Nice. Our interns are Christina Arison, Judith Lloyd, and Brian Boone. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.